Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Let's have some fun. It's football day.
Yay!
That's the sound of Joe Scrabble's opening a beer because it's Friday afternoon.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
And it's the UK podcast from IGN because I missed out those letters at the start of that. Matt Perslow's here as well.
Hello.
You've been ill this week. How are you feeling?
Yeah, a bit better. I do apologise if I'm coming across quite nasally.
Quite stuffy.
Yeah, I am on the wheelie chair though, so you know, if I get into an emergency, I can just wheel off into the corner.
What kind of illness are we talking about if there's emergency situations?
When I say emergency, I mean a slightly snot-related emergency. I don't want to get it over any of you or the equipment.
You're not going to do some sort of powerful fart that shoots you across the room.
I feel like I've been on the cusp of a cold for about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, you talk about it quite a lot.
I know. I feel like if I keep talking about it, it'll stay away.
Me and you are having a weekend in Paris.
We are.
And like,
I don't want to be ill for that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of kissing.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Anyway, this is a bit of a different podcast. Mm-hmm. For the first half, it'll be normal, as per.
Big film special as well.
Yeah. Second half, after feedback, don't worry, there'll be plenty of spoiler warnings and warnings, music, warnings, hooters, klaxons. There'll be warnings
for
spoilers.
Please put all of those in it. If I don't hear every single one of those elements.
We're recording this at almost 5 on a Friday. I want edit time.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah, I'm not getting it this week. But yeah, Joker comes out today.
Mm.
We just went and saw it. I saw it for the second time. Don't, you guys have literally just walked out seeing it.
Don't tell our boss.
Yeah.
he was there as well.
He was in the cinema with us.
But yeah, we're going to do a big old, I don't know, a lengthy chat, and that'll be full of spoilers.
Yeah, it's going to be a big spoiler cast. So big spoiler bit of our cast.
But there'll be plenty of warnings, so don't you worry. But for the first half, we're going to talk about a lot of films that aren't out yet. So we can't spoil them because we haven't seen them.
Unless they spoil themselves. Yeah.
First up,
many trailers do.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're going to talk about Joker later. But first, we're going to talk about Harley Quinn.
Oh, great.
Birds of Prey.
Great. Can't wait.
The only... So, I still haven't actually seen Suicide Squad.
She's the best part of
bad things. I've seen like 5-10 minute segments here and then when it's on TV just out of morbid curiosity.
It's made it all up.
So yeah, I can't really talk too badly about it because I haven't seen it, and that would be unfair. But Birds of Prey trailer is not doing a lot for me, I can tell you that.
Well, as you've heard, if you've listened to this podcast since the Suicide Squad days, as we call them, you'll know that it is a perfect 4-pint film. If you're there with your mates after 4 pints, it was quite enjoyable.
Really? Is that the consensus we have?
That was what me and Gav said, and that's because we were the only two people who saw it with mates after 4 pints. And our experience was that it was quite fun, because you can't really concentrate on the fact there aren't details to concentrate on.
But what do you think about Suicide Squad, Matt? Because people might not know your opinions on that film.
I genuinely think it's one of the worst films of the superhero golden age.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
And do you hold up much hope for Birds of Prey?
Not at all, because it just looks like Suicide. This is the thing, right, is that I agree with Joe that Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn is the best thing of that film.
Mm.
And so there was kind of a little bit of hope that, like, if you pull her out, and she's obviously got creative control over it, there's no Jared Leto
in this.
If she
has some sort of fantabulous emancipation.
Well, yes, exactly. there was the hope that this could be interesting. Obviously, it's got Mary Elizabeth Winstead in this as Huntress.
She's great.
Good. But yeah, it seems to be carrying on, like, all the tonal strangeness of Suicide Squad, and I hate that.
No. I'm very intrigued by what Ewan McGregor's up to in this film.
Oh, it's Ewan McGregor doing his one British, one American accent he can do, which is an American accent from nowhere.
I'm very hit and miss on Ewan McGregor. I think
Me
he's
too.
Either brilliant or absolutely terrible.
Agreed.
And yeah, in this, it's I'm erring towards terrible. Like, I've not really talked to Dr. Sleep's coming soon, and he looks like he could potentially be good in that.
Well, he's got the same voice. Yeah. So
I feel like it. That looks
good. But almost
good,
certainly the material for Dr. Sleep is going to be better.
Well, yeah, he's got Mike Flanagan directing him, so it's
the
fine.
Material, some of his jackets in Birds of Prey look very interesting. He's just wearing suede constantly by the looks of it.
He's got the white suit as well, the Black Mask is known for wearing.
Do you think he's actually going to put a black mask on at any
point? Almost certainly.
But it'll be one of those moments that's in all superhero films that don't want to just be comic book films. So what'll happen is, like, he'll be in a clothes shop and it'll blow up and he'll be like and he'll be looking around like clawing at the ground and his hand will fall on a black mask and then he'll go, oh, I like this, and that'll be it.
There won't be like accidentally like super glue attached to the inside so we can never get
there's
it
there's that too, yeah. Definitely that. Like, you'll be like, now I live it.
Oh, this is going to happen, right? He's going to get disfigured, and so therefore he'll wear the black mask so that he doesn't have to look, like, messed up.
Yeah.
It'll just be Two-Face, but with a mask.
Yeah. So the second last shot of the film before we get the shot of Harley Quinn, I don't know, having her emancipation, will be Ewan McGregor standing up from some rubble with his disfigured mask on. That'll be it.
I'm not looking forward to this one.
It just doesn't look fun. Like, the whole point of that trailer is that it's meant to be fun, and I didn't have any fun watching it.
I'm very confused what's going on with this particular, like, Suicide Squad thing, because this James Gunn film is it a reboot, because it's half the same cast.
They keep changing their minds.
What is this film? What is this?
I'm doing the biggest shrug. Shrug emoji that people build out of little bits of punctuation.
What he did with Guardians of the Galaxy, I obviously have some faith in him to get this right. But and why? What's going on?
It's the shrug that literally everybody that's not working. I mean, I imagine half the people at Warner Brothers are doing the same shrug as I am. Like, I don't think anybody's got any clue, and that's the problem, right? It's like, as much as like the internals of Marvel are a mystery to most of us until the film actually comes out, there is a certain logic that you see paving the way, you know, things certain break down when deals can't go right and people can't make the money they want to, but overall things make sense. But yeah, like, not knowing, so this Suicide Squad thing does have Harley Quinn in it, right? Like, that has been established, I think.
I don't know.
There we go, like,
yeah,
that's it. Maybe she's emancipated herself from the Suicide Squad as well. Did they get all their bombs out at the end of Suicide Squad?
I know Big Joel Kinnaman's back in, and
Joel Kinnaman, man.
Who decided he needs to stick around?
I mean, we're going to talk
He was good in some stuff.
We're going to talk about Charlie Hunnam later.
Oh,
he's one of them. One of these guys that
he's been good in one thing.
Excuse me, is anyone else seeing this?
Apparently, so I've never watched Sons of Anarchy. Apparently, it's good.
Yeah, but apparently, his accent's all over the place.
Oh, well, he's good at that.
Weird.
Anyway, from one comic book movie that looks shocking to another that actually looks quite good and was once kind of grounded in a comic book, but I don't think they ever went to World War One in the comics.
No.
Or the graphic novel, anyway.
So this is The Kingsman.
Not The Kingsman, The Kingsman.
Yeah,
it's clever. Very crucial. Very clever, if not just slightly irritating. But I was not up for this at all. Off the first trailer, I was pretty cold on it.
So I quite liked the first trailer.
Really? It wasn't doing a lot for me. And I thought the second Kingsman film was fairly bad.
Yeah. Yes.
And
Elton John, man, come on.
Yeah. And just that whole Glastonbury scene is one of the worst.
Oh god, scenes. Yeah. I forgot about that.
That's tonally wrong. But this new trailer for The King's Man, I'm well up for this film.
I think it looks
really good. And it has Ralph Fiennes doing his, like, almost kind of a PG version of his in Bruges.
Yes.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Like,
and I just love Ralph Fiennes.
He's very good.
Yeah. So he is known to be a good actor.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. The thing.
Little fact for you there, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. Schindler's List.
Good.
The English Patient.
Good.
And the others.
Voldemort.
Oh, you're so good as Voldemort, though.
But the bit that gets me most excited about this film, Rasputin.
Yeah.
Man, what a mad choice.
I love Rasputin. He is one of my favourite historical figures just because there's so much myth around this person. It was only around 100 years ago, but people have this opinion of some sort of wizard.
Was
he had one of the biggest penises ever.
Yeah.
He wouldn't die.
Yeah. Like, it is the timeline is the most interesting thing with Rasputin. I know we're getting off on a tangent here.
About Rasputin all day.
Like, he's contemporaneous with a load of people who we know literally everything about. Yeah. Like, we know their whole life and there's almost no mystery to them. And they like, a few hundred miles away. He's a wizard now.
Yeah.
He's impervious to poison.
He's a mad monk who's having an affair with the Tsarina and can cure haemophilia.
Yeah.
He didn't. But
well, that seems to be a plot point as well in the King's Man.
So yeah, I'm intrigued by this because it looks like it's obviously taking place around World War One, that sort of time, which makes sense with Rasputin. It looks like there's a scene with a parade and assassination. I don't know if that's supposed to
is
be Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah, it looks like the start of World War One.
I like this. I really, really like alternative history fiction.
Yeah.
One of my favourite set of books is the first book is called Leviathan, I think, and it's set in World War One, but the Germans have got giant mechs. And the, of course, they
hello.
Have.
Oh, we go.
And they're the clanky European type.
And the British have, it's all based on a science that's called Darwinism. So they have massive animals. So they, like, their battleships are giant whales that fly through the sky.
Yeah.
And they fire, like, eagles, I think it is, out of my broadside battleship. Like, it's amazing. But the thing I really like about it is because it's set in World War One, it's based on, you know, like, World War One adventure books that you used to give to kids in, like,
Boys
the 20s?
Mm.
Yeah. So it's got that sense of adventure, which I think this has got. It looks like, whereas, like, Kingsman 2 kind of fell into that, like, oh, it's cheeky, a bit naughty humour, and, you know, like, this looks like it's a bit more of a, almost like a Bruckheimer adventure sort of film.
Is it Matthew Vaughn doing this?
I think so.
Yeah. His name pops up at the start of the trailer, whether that's, and it's he's directing.
And it's a Marv production, that's his company. So.
I hope he doesn't rely on, like, anal jokes anymore.
No
one had anal back then anyway.
No, they
apart
didn't know
from
what
Rasputin.
It was. Yeah. Allegedly.
Yeah. Rasputin, he didn't have much to do with World War One, did he?
Not really, no. I'm not getting into this.
Well, this is it.
I've got a 900-page biography on Rasputin that I'm 150 pages into because it is a slog.
Yeah.
Just watch Anastasia instead. Did you watch Anastasia when you were a kid?
I did. I really liked it. But
that's where he started.
It's all a lie.
I do wonder if this is alternate history fiction or if it's kind of fake conspiracy theory fiction.
In the same way that, like, the first Sherlock Holmes one that Guy Ritchie did had got that fake magic stuff in
it. I kind of wonder if this is like, oh, you know how World War One started. No, you don't! Rasputin did it!
But they're doing the thing again where that Rasputin looks like he's the main villain, whereas in real life he wasn't really... Myers, anyway, that much of a villain. Like, in Anastasia, he's obviously some sort of mad magic villain and
look,
stuff.
Let's do a Rasputin spoiler cast at some point.
He's Russia's greatest love machine.
Who's playing him?
That's a very good question. Some mad bastard. It's him. He's still alive. He's playing himself.
Imagine if it was Ralph Fiennes. He's playing dual roles, Nutty Professor style. He's a cool British spy.
I think you've worked out the twist. But it looks fun.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I've had a lot of fun even talking about it.
There's another World War One film coming as well, which doesn't look anywhere near as fun.
This is very well organised, Cardi. I appreciate this ordering you've done.
I know, I thought about it for once. It's not all off the cuff.
Shut up.
1917, which looks like Sam Mendes' World War One Dunkirk.
It looks too much.
I think it looks fantastic.
It's got that, because I think it's Roger Deakins that's on DP on this, and it's got that. The thing I really like about Dunkirk is just it's like proper full crisp. Like, it looks so crisp.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of long shots in the trailer.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I only found out yesterday that this is a Birdman-style one-shot film that they're doing. You didn't know this?
No.
They're doing it as a seamless one-taker, which sounds insane.
Jesus.
For a film of that scale.
If you're selling that, why isn't the trailer just a little snippet of it?
That is true, because it's all cut up and it looks action-packed from that. But I wondered, like, because obviously there's a lot of time period going on in this.
There is a whole lot of time period.
I don't know what's going on.
I would assume what it might do is do things where, like, you, for artistic interpretation, you have him walking and you can see, like, the backdrop changing from, like, maybe a season to another season.
I don't know if it's across seasons, but there's definitely a day-night cycle at least. So it's not over the course of an hour and a half. But, it's about these two young soldiers who are sent on a mission to go...
They have to go through enemy lines, don't they, to try and deliver a message to prevent an attack happening.
Would, like an ambush.
That would slaughter 1,600 sort of thing. And it includes one of those two soldiers' brothers is one of those people. So there's a personal side to it as well.
I am super glad that... I mean, maybe this is probably attributing too much, but it seems to have learned from Dunkirk that the way to tell a grand war story is to tell a small story within it and tell, like, use it as microcosm. Because so many war films are about, like, look at the conflict. Yeah. And actually, it's quite good to just have, like, look how fucking tough this was.
Well, that's why Saving Private Ryan works so well, right? Because it is just about, like, the last brother, he needs to come home, otherwise that family is fucked.
Oh, I might watch that this weekend.
That's good, isn't
it? A good film, Saving Private Ryan.
Are we going to watch it together in Paris?
No, I'm going to watch it by myself in bed.
In Paris?
Not in Paris.
I mean, you'd be closer to the
actual event
there.
Yeah. You'd cry even more.
Aww. But no, 1917 looks good. I trust Sam Mendes. I think he's very good, even if... I didn't mind Spectre. I thought it was fine.
Do not like Spectre. I thought it was fine. Skyfall is... It's between that and Casino is my favourite Bond. Yeah. So.
I feel like Sam Mendes is working within different parameters when he's making Bond films to when he's making a war film. Yeah. So he's probably fine.
I think he's got a good sense of stuff. I really love Revolutionary Road.
Mm-hmm. No, I've never actually watched that.
I really like that film.
Looks a bit much.
It's not.
Is it not?
No, it's more... It's a drama.
Tough.
And... I still think, obviously, it's shrouded and stuff, but American Beauty is an incredible film.
American Beauty is unbelievable. Yeah. You can't take that away from him.
You cannot. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's out in January, so that's not far away.
Bloody hell.
When's The Kingsman out?
Ask me later.
I think that might be later this year.
I think
year.
It's quite soon.
Is it this year?
I've seen
a lot of trailers recently that say the word December at the end of it. I'm like, there are a lot of films coming out in December.
Yeah.
And there's a Star Wars in December. What are you doing?
Yeah. I think also coming out in December is Clint Eastwood's new film, Richard Jewell.
Yeah. Unlike The King's Man, which comes out in February 2020.
There we go. That's still not far away.
No, not really.
Richard Jewell, what do you know? I know about... Richard Jewell is a real life story of the 1996 Atlanta bombing.
Mm-hmm.
And Richard Jewell was the man. Do you want to know the premise?
I mean, the
premise is that he was the man who found the bomb and called it in and saved a lot of people's lives. But then quite soon afterwards, he was the chief suspect for that bombing. And it's all about... So I know how it turns out. I'm not going to tell people how it turns out. Although it's a real life event that happened 20 odd years ago, I'm not going
to
spoil it.
I unfortunately saw his name, knew it was a true story, and went onto Wikipedia to look him up. And the first line of his Wikipedia entry gives away the entire plot of the film.
Brilliant.
But it's not going to be about that because it lives in the American consciousness.
It'll be about the process. And it's very. So the thing that I'm worried about this film is I like Clint Eastwood films a lot, but his last few have been very politically heavy and sometimes not in the way I think about things.
Yeah.
And because this will be a film that's all about the media and the effect they can have on people's mindset.
So I don't actually know a lot about Clint Eastwood's political views. Is he a CNN is bad?
He's pretty quite NRA.
Ooh.
He's big NRA.
You can imagine someone who's been in a lot of westerns liking a rifle.
When Charlton Heston died, the person who took the rifle from his cold dead hands was Clint Eastwood.
Do you remember the empty chair incident?
No.
When he was just talking to an empty chair.
Clint Eastwood was talking to an empty chair.
Oh, we'll watch it afterwards. But anyway.
It's quite something.
The last Eastwood film I properly watched was Sully, and I thought that was the most average film I've ever seen. It was perfectly fine. Didn't really have a point to
it. Tom Hanks is always good
in an average film. If you're going to make an average film, if you're setting out, I'm going average. Tom Hanks sits in it, you're like, wicked. Bucks.
I think
there
was a little golden period for Eastwood. Like, I think Million Dollar Baby is brilliant. Sure. Gran Torino's very good. I actually really like Changeling, and a lot of people don't.
I didn't know that was him.
Yeah, I really like that.
That's the Angelina Jolie one.
Yeah.
Did he do Mystic River?
Yes.
And people love that.
Film. Yeah, and obviously Unforgiven. And he had 10 to 15 years where he was making very good films.
Yeah.
He is now 89.
Mm.
He made two films last year. He's very prolific.
Yeah.
Maybe he should just calm down. No, not necessarily. But
can you imagine being directed by an 89-year-old man? Yeah. You'd just be like, come on.
He's kind of found his thing now, though, which is like, I'm going to pick an event that's quite small in scale that I can tell in an hour and a half to 2 hours and just tell that story. And
it's almost
done.
Like he can't get on long plane flights. like he has to be one location.
Yeah. But I think this looks good. It's got John Hammond.
Like a bit of ham.
You do like a bit of ham.
Slice.
Olivia Wilde's in it, and Sam Rockwell, who is always, always good.
Yes, he has. I was going to say, has Sam Rockwell ever made a bad film? And then I remembered Iron Man 2. But he's quite good in it.
It's so also a very small part.
Yeah, just a little dance.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure it'll be exactly what I think it is, and that's fine. It's not going to do a lot to the world, but it's not going to be terrible. What could be very good, but could also be very terrible?
Mm-hmm.
The Gentleman.
Yes.
Guy Ritchie's gone back to Cockney gangster films.
Except Matthew McConaughey in it. Just being Matthew McConaughey for a bit.
So I really like Snatch and Lockstock.
Yeah.
I used to love them. And now when I try watching them, I'm like, I would realise why I liked them when I was 16.
Yes.
And maybe I don't love them. I think Lockstock's a better film. I used to love Snatch a lot more.
Oh, Lockstock's definitely better than
it's
Snatch.
It's a better film, yeah. When I was younger, I preferred Snatch.
You don't need to laugh at that. We all got it.
Unbelievable.
You sent me off there.
I didn't do anything.
I'm not saying it was you. Anyway, Gentleman.
Can we just quickly go through Guy Ritchie's career in films?
Oh, it's very mixed. Actually, it's just gone down.
It's quite an astonishing drop. Yeah. The Hard Case is a short film I've never seen. That was 1995. Mm-hmm. Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Not a fan. I'm not a fan of Guy Ritchie in general.
That's fair. Snatch. Weirdly, listed in his filmography is Star, a segment from the BMW short film series.
I remember it well.
2002, Swept Away. Swept Away.
He did, yeah.
The rat film. This is a man who did Lock, Stock and Snatch and then made Swept Away as his big trilogy.
Is Swept Away the rat film? I thought that was Flushed Away.
You're right. What is Swept Away?
I'm absolutely
wrong.
Is
Swept Away the one with Madonna in?
It's a romantic comedy film, a remake of Lina Wertmüller's 1974 Italian film, the same name. The film stars Ritchie's then wife, Madonna.
So not the animated...
I really thought he'd done Flushed Away for a second.
Fucking associating Guy Ritchie with some of
rat
Artman.
Film. Revolver.
Fucking hell.
Oh, that was bad.
This I'd completely forgotten about. Rock and Roller.
Yeah, I went to see that in the cinema and I hated it.
So did I. So that was part when I did GCSE media studies. For some reason, we did a case study on it on film marketing, and then we all went as a class to see it. It was bad.
Yeah. Who's the guy that's in that plays like the young drug dealer and he was marked as the big up and comer at the time?
Rock and Roller.
I'm not gonna remember that name.
Toby Kebbell?
Yes.
He's amazing in Dead Man's Shoes.
Oh, well there you go.
Plays a good monkey as well.
Excuse me.
Isn't Kebbell's?
I'm sorry.
Slight uptick, Sherlock Holmes 1. I like that film.
Yeah, the first one. I think the first one's entertaining enough.
Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows.
Nope.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which no one remembers exists.
Some people think that's okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah. King Arthur.
That's terrible, isn't it?
And Aladdin. But
I forgot you did Aladdin. That's a mad one when you think about it, isn't it?
It's as mad as Flushed Away, the film he made.
But anyway, The Gentleman is back to that sort of Lock, Stock vibe. And it has Hugh Grant doing funny accent.
Yeah.
I wish he did that more. Why has he gotten to this point for him to do this?
The first 20 seconds of the Gentleman trailer made me think, this might be amazing.
And then Charlie Hunnam starts speaking.
Yeah.
In what sounds like he's trying to do a Scouse accent.
I think he's Scouse.
I think.
But then at the end, he sounds exactly like Football Day again. Like, there's a bit where a kid steals a phone from a dead body and he runs after them and he goes, "Little!" Like, he's definitely swearing after that word, but it sounds like Charlie Hunnam's Green Street.
But then bizarrely, Matthew McConaughey's in as a...
just playing a Texan marijuana salesman.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm that excited about this. I want to... like, that Hugh Grant performance looks good, but I don't know if that's just... going to be every now and then he turns up in his office and says a few funny lines.
I was going to say, can Hugh Grant doing a funny voice save a film? But then Paddington 2... well, it didn't need saving.
Didn't save it.
Didn't save it, but it did elevate it.
Yeah.
Paddington 2 is unbelievable.
That's the thing. Just go and watch... if you want Hugh Grant doing cool, funny skits, go and watch Paddington 2. Literally one of the best films ever made.
I just like the way he says Ray.
I love the way he goes... we've watched this trailer a few times.
Yeah.
Start this trailer if you haven't seen it, and you should watch it, is Charlie Hunnam talking to Hugh Grant, but Hugh Grant starts by going, "Can we play a game, mate?" And then there's a bit where I can't tell if it's a mistake, but he says Ray again, but he follows it up quite late with Mund, so he just goes, "Ray, Mund." It's really
weird. I don't
think
it's pronounced as you think it is. It's like Raymond.
Raymond. It's very strange.
Anyway,
I liked it a lot.
Those are five films coming out.
Yeah.
I think I'm really looking forward to 1917 in The Kingsman.
Rank them, 1 to 5.
I'm going 1917 I want to see most, then The Kingsman, then Richard Jewell, then The Gentleman, then Birds of Prey.
Ditto.
17 further down for me.
Do you not like war? Do you not like the horrors of
Dunkirk
war?
Dunkirk just fucked me up so much.
Yeah?
I was not well after that film. Well, it was so sad.
You might recover in time for this.
No, I don't need it again. Mm. One of those two boys is dying, isn't he? Be sad.
Oh, let me put that into my head. Do you know a game where a lot of people die?
Yeah.
Between 97 and 99 every time.
No, actually,
Apex
it's
Legend.
A 60-player game, thank you very much.
Well, I've got that wrong, haven't I?
Damn.
Apex, you've played it, Matt. Evidently.
Well, I mean, yeah, I've been playing season 3, though, now, right?
Yeah, I played a lot of season 1, little bit of season 2, fell off, though, a bit, because other games happened, don't
well,
they?
I mean, they did, yeah.
But season 3 is interesting me, mainly because there's a whole new map.
A whole
and it
new
look-
map.
Jesus. Oh, that was unexpected. And it looks colourful.
It is.
How colourful is it? On a scale of 1 to 10, how many colours?
I don't know. Where do we draw the line?
That's for you to decide.
It's got like at least 4.
Yeah. So 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Wow. No, it's much more colourful than that. I was going to go 8.
It's got lots of nice neons in it.
What is going on? Can we talk about the game?
It's got a... I believe that's a volcanic plate section.
There is a volcano. Yeah, so there's volcanoes. This is just spiraling out of control now, isn't it? There's a volcano section. There's an ice section. There's lots of biomes now.
Yeah,
that's
so that's
the deal.
I like the original Apex.
I hate this.
I like Kings Canyon. I thought it was a very good Battle Royale map. It was a good size, but it didn't really vary that much. It had a sandy area, a grassy area, and kind of a swampy area, and that was it.
It's kind of much more like a PUBG map in which that kind of... I think that's the thing. You've got two schools of thought maybe in Battle Royale, is that you have PUBG-style maps which are thematically solid across it, or you have the Fortnite idea, which is where you break it up into lots of little almost Minecraft-y style, sort of like, here is the bit that does this, and then you move like 4 feet to the left, and suddenly you're in the ice bit now.
This one has a big fucker of a train going through it.
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah.
Can you get run over?
You can start it and stop it.
Ooh. And you could jump on it. Yeah. And you can ride it around and get into the city. You've got a city in it now. It's much more Titanfall-like in the way that it's designed.
It does look a much bigger map.
Yeah. Actually, you say that. I think now I've had a few games in it, it's not that much bigger than Kings Canyon, but there's much more open space, which does mean that if you're good at sniping, there's slightly more opportunity. And if you're bad at sniping, or you're bad at running away from snipers, it can be slightly more frustrating depending on where you've landed.
How does it deal with... Do you have to choose a map to go into?
No. At the moment, in Season 3, there is only this new map.
Oh, they've got rid of the other one.
Yeah,
I
Kings
didn't
Canyon
that.
Is gone. And it wouldn't surprise me if there's... There's definitely, I think, a push now for the idea of the legends are like Overwatch's characters. Like, they have, like, Crypto has turned up, who's their new character.
He's the new character, Crypto, and he has a drone.
He does have a drone,
which looks very fun and very useful, but it obviously means your character is just standing there doing nothing and can get shot.
So, I haven't used him yet because obviously, like, you have to pay to play as new characters, and so like I've been waiting to do enough kind of drops with people that are using him to decide whether I want to use it or not. And I think I'm probably going to drop some money on him, largely because like I quite like it when people steal stuff from Rainbow Six.
Yeah.
And it's the preparation phase from Rainbow Six to a degree, or you know, sort of like when you deploy your drone to peek around corners, but this drone can fly and you can get nice overhead views. And when you effectively, Crypto has a neural link that he shares with the two other people on your team, so what he can see, they can see as well.
Oh, that's very cool.
So if you send the drone up and there's a squad over there, it highlights little triangles around them. So it's a bit like, you know how Bloodhound can sort of like do the big pulse and they're non-binary, aren't they, can see where other people are behind it. It's a bit like granting that to other people on your team. And also the drone can then deploy an EMP, which shatters their shields. So you can shatter the shields, show everybody on your team where they are, and just do kind of an ambush
that
move.
That seems
dirty.
Powerful.
But, I mean, but as you say,
it means, if you're in a team of three, you're only down to two people.
Yeah, you've got two people that have to look out for you, effectively, because... And it's not like... I guess there are plenty of places you can hide, but it's not like there's a specific sort of like cover mechanic where you're locking yourself down behind something you make yourself safe. So there's, you know, there's a risk reward there. And I'm sure like he probably needs a bit of balancing.
And can that, I assume that drone can be shot by enemies?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's lots of things to think
about.
I'm
going to jump back in that because I only ever played with the base characters. I never got into any of the new ones they added.
I play Watson quite a lot and I like Watson a lot.
Crypto does interest me because they seem very powerful abilities, but it's the same thing in Siege. I don't want to be a character like Echo who's has to be on a drone a lot of the time. I like to be just mobile, running around with a gun.
Yeah. I think the pace of the game is something where you wouldn't want to be on the drone all the time because like you ruin the pace of the battle royale if you don't. And there's lots of quite a lot of the old modifications have been rotated out now and replaced with different ones. So there are like you can one of them I think basically turns the flatline assault rifle more into like a sniper rifle, like really heavy rounds but only single shot. And so there's lots of changes around there. And obviously you can't make the most of that if you're on your drone all the time. So I think like it's finding that balance, right?
Have you got a win yet this season?
Yeah.
Okay, don't take offence. I was just asking. Yeah. I don't know how many games you've played.
You're a piece of shit.
You might have only played one game.
I've only played three this season.
He's an absolute king.
Now he's showing off. Do you think you can win the Endless Search this week?
Probably not. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it Endless Search?
So, for the Endless Search this week, we've got a couple of good suggestions for games. We will have a look at those, but for now, we're a bit rushed this week, so I do apologise. It's gonna be a used concept.
Yes.
Which is the Mr. Lister game that Joe brought up a few weeks ago now, two or three. But I've selected five cards. I'm going to explain the rules. Don't worry, Joe.
Well, we're doing it less blind than we did it last time.
I've selected five.
It's
going to
be better.
Better set to our interests, I think.
Okay.
And basically, there's going to be, it's pretty much like go on, name them, but instead of bidding how many you want to say, you're just going to take turns answering until someone can't name one. So,
and then you get knocked out.
For example, it'll be like, that'd be a really simple one, but, you know, Star Wars films. You just take turns at saying them until someone can't say one.
Okay.
Yeah. Should be simple.
Yep.
Here we go. And there's five different ones, and it's the best of five.
Okay.
So the first topic is the 10 most famous fictional bears, according to The Guardian.
Well.
Who goes first?
Is
it just whoever answers first?
I think we should take turns. So I'm going to... Well, Matt was very confident, so Joe can go first.
Okay.
Yogi
is there.
Pooh.
Sorry?
Pooh Bear.
He's there.
Baloo.
Baloo is there.
Paddington.
He is. That's four.
Shit.
Do you remember there's Star Dancers? So they're extra special ones.
Oh,
but
what's the forest fire bear?
Sorry?
Hawthorn.
What? I've never heard of it. Who's the forest fire bear?
There's a forest fire bear in the US. Forest. I know I've lost. Forest fire.
Fictional bears, according to The Guardian.
Yeah,
you've gone for the forest fire bear.
Smokey Bear.
Who's that?
You've never seen Smokey Bear?
No.
Only you can prevent forest fires.
Oh. Did you have any more?
In Smokey. The big blue house.
He's not there, no.
Smokey the Bear. Only you can prevent forest fires.
So you got four of them, and they were four of the standard answers. There was five special ones that you get. So we're not playing the game, I should say, how it's meant to be played.
I don't care.
Because I feel like our rules are better for a podcast. Yeah, the main rules of the game actually involve writing things down.
That's
not a good audio medium.
It's good if you're playing across the parlor
No
table.
One likes the sound of graphite against paper in their ears. Actually, I do.
Stop breathing so heavily.
Anyway... other ones you could have had. Rupert.
Oh, shit, he's got the trousers.
Is Super Ted on there?
No, Super Ted's good though. Yeah. Do you remember Teddy Trucks?
No.
The TV animated. Oh, that was good. I'm slightly younger than you, so maybe that's that. You could have had Ted, which is disappointing.
Oh, what? The Seth McGonagall. Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah. Yeah, you could have had Ted. You could have had Bungle from Rainbow. Oh, I'm a big fan of Bungle. Irit Burnison from His Dark Materials. Yeah. You had the John Lewis bear.
Oh, fuck off.
The Guardian can F right off.
And Fozzie.
Yeah, yeah, fair play.
Fair play. That's one now. I was going to... Nah, come on, let's make a bear joke. That's 1-0 to Matt. Four more. Next one is... Are you ready?
Yeah.
The 13 different types of milk listed on shape.com. This is very...
What is shape.com?
I think it's like a Weight Watchers.
Are we talking animal variants or...
It's just different type, 13 different types
of
milk.
What do you mean, 13 types of milk?
That's the question.
I guess we have to gamble.
There's 13. We talked about milk a few weeks ago on the podcast. Matt goes first.
Are they? Can I just clarify? Are these brands?
They're not brands. They're types of milk.
Right. So semi-skimmed.
Yes.
Okay. So that that was the big one.
Whole. I'll give it to you. It's full fat here.
It's, come on. It's the blue cap.
Yeah.
Skimmed.
Yep. Well, those are those three.
Sheep's.
Sorry?
Sheep's milk.
How kind am I being here?
How kind am I?
There's goat. Would you allow
that's not the same.
Okay,
well,
there we go. There's no sheep.
Sheep's milk. Come on.
Is that a regular supermarket?
It's what Fetter's made out of, baby. And Asda sells camel milk these days, so...
Does it?
Yeah. Mm. Costs a lot. I'm going to buy it one day, but my Asda nearly burnt down.
That doesn't prevent you from...
You can go find it in
Asda. I'm not going to a faraway Asda. I go to my local Asda, which nearly burnt down, and then I can't now.
When you say nearly burnt down, as in it set on fire but didn't collapse, or...
Look, okay, Walthamstow had a fire incident in the mall. The Asda's part of the mall. It's in the wing of the mall that was burning.
Okay.
Asda's closed for a bit. I had to cut down on my camel milk.
Well, Matt's 2-0 up. Did you have any others?
Is like almond milk on there?
Yeah, it is.
Coconut.
Yeah.
I drink it every day.
Oats.
Yeah.
All cashew.
Yeah.
Soy.
Yeah. He's a milk boy.
Hazelnut.
Yeah, he's a milk boy.
The milkman. Matt the Milkman Purslow.
There's only, I already said goat, so you can't have that one, but there's only three more.
Go on. Go on, Milky.
Test your milk.
Rice.
Yes.
He's got two more. Come on, Matt.
Trying to think what the other ones are. I think you're going into the Alpro section of...
Matt's whole body language has changed. He looks so proud. He looks like a wrestler.
So basically, my previous office, most people were attempting to go vegan.
Okay.
So we changed all of the cereal milk for various different...
He's got an advantage.
...and alternatives. Trying to think what other ones we had.
Experiential milk advantage.
We've already done coconut, haven't
we?
Yeah,
I did coconut.
There's only two more. I would never have got these as milks.
Fuck it.
Are these like in the bottom stars?
These are two special stars. So rice and cashew were also starred. So
are they nut-based milks or?
No.
Are they animal-based milks?
No.
Well, we're getting too many clues now, aren't we?
You've got. If you don't know them, you don't know them. You've already proved some milk knowledge.
Many
hemp.
Hemp.
Oh, I have used hemp in a cake before. It was god awful.
Stinky weed
and
milk.
And flax.
I didn't realise you can make milk out of flax seeds.
You should try that.
I mean, that's impressive milk knowledge.
That's impressive milk knowledge. You've got to give it to the man.
Very well done. And you
deservedly 2-0 up.
The milkman forever.
Next subject. This should be very relevant to our interests. And if you don't get them all, you should be sacked.
I've had enough of this for not having played The Last of Us online.
Well, more of that later. As of 2019, there are 12 games consoles that have sold more units than any others.
That's a weird way to phrase that question.
It's basically the 12,
top-selling games consoles of all time.
Yeah, it doesn't say if that's Britain or worldwide, but I would say worldwide.
They're probably similar.
Yeah. Joe first.
PlayStation 2.
Yes.
PlayStation 4?
Yes.
The Nintendo Wii?
Yes.
The Xbox 360?
Yes.
The Nintendo Game Boy? If that's not on there, that's bullshit.
It is, yeah, yeah.
It's gonna go.
It's just teasing. You know when Chris Tarrant said, "Are you sure?" When everyone knew it was right.
Yeah, it was awful.
So teasing them. Got to drag out a 10-minute quiz into an hour program.
Game Boy Color. Oh really?
It's under Game Boy, surely.
Well, it's not here.
But I mean, it'd be a Game Boy variant, I think.
Oh.
Like you count all versions of my next guest, the Nintendo DS.
Yes.
Under one thing, even though there's DS, DS Lite, DS others.
Well, I don't know. How are we playing this?
Well, I win.
Okay. It's 2-1 to Matt.
I'm happy for
that. You could also have had the PlayStation 3.
Three? I genuinely wouldn't have put the three. I didn't realize
I guess it makes sense
12.
Amidst, yeah, the whole 12 games. Yeah.
You could have had the 3DS, the PSP.
The Xbox One's got to be on there.
No.
What? Less than the PS3? Yeah. Oh, it would be in 2017.
The PSP, the Game Boy Advance, and the NES.
The GBA.
There we go. GBA I had. It's my first Game Boy, the Game Boy Advance.
That was my first Game Boy, and my dad bought it for me because I jumped off a rock.
A lot of personal stories this week.
Out of protest, or?
So, is there a fire nearby in the mall?
No, I can remember being on holiday in somewhere in the south of Spain, and I really didn't like the idea of diving off things into swimming pools.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad said, I'll buy you a Game Boy Advance if you jump off that big rock into that swimming pool.
I'll buy you a Game Boy if you jump in a swimming pool. A fun thing to do anyway.
It's a nice thing to do. Leave him
He was encouraging me to be a braver little lad.
Fair
enough.
And
look at him now, naming milks like there's no tomorrow.
Wow, he's 2-1 up. Here's number 4. It's all to play for. Arnold Schwarzenegger's 12 highest rated films on IMDb.
Oh,
that's
that
IMDb,
is good.
Not SIMDb.
Yeah. No one cares about
that. Matt first.
Terminator 2.
Yep.
I'm out. let's say Terminator 1.
Yes.
Commando.
Yes.
Going out on a limb. Last Action Hero.
Mm-mm.
Really? That's a fun film.
It's a fun time.
Wow, it's not on the top 12.
Should
Can you imagine
said,
that?
Why didn't I just say Predator?
That's 3-1 to Matt. I'll just list the others because we can't name them all. Total Recall, True Lies, Conan the Barbarian, The Running Man, which is a personal favourite. Predator.
Mm-hmm.
California State of Mind, The Long Goodbye, Dave, and Escape Plan.
Wow.
I would have said that Last Action Hero would be above at least half of those.
I think so too, but I am stupid for not saying Predator.
May I also say No Jingle Away, the best Christmas film.
I don't know if it's the wrong best.
That's fine. It's all right.
It is. 3-1 to Matt, so he has won this week, but there's still some pride, Joe. Don't worry.
What am I going to do against Milky Boy?
There's no source for this, so I don't know where they're getting this info, but it just says the nation's 10 favourite biscuits.
Okay.
I don't know according to who.
It doesn't say which nation.
It's our nation, the UK. But yeah, I don't know who, if this is from... Oh no, there's a little source here, metro.co.uk.
I love that.
So
it's my favourite free newspaper.
10 favourite biscuits. Joe.
Rich tea. If rich tea's not on that list, that's insane.
No one
agree
likes them. I like rich tea biscuits.
You're boring.
You agree that's bullshit.
I mean, it's probably on the 10 most highest selling. Is it anyone's favourite?
Rich tea's not on the fucking list.
I guess it as a favourite. I see if I'm going to buy them, buy the ones with chocolate on them.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to just buy a normal.
A chocolate rich tea.
Yeah.
Why have I said rich tea?
You've made a fool of yourself.
I don't think I've made a fool. I think I've made a fool of Lister.
So there is, I will say there's some controversy on this list. So I'll read the ones that aren't that controversial. Chocolate digestives.
Yeah.
Jammy Dodgers.
A normal digestives on it.
Yes.
Good.
So digestives are
Hobnob,
Jimmy Dodgers, chocolate hobnobs are not normal hobnobs.
The greatest biscuit.
Custard creams, but spelt custard cremes, as in the French way with an accent. That's not how a custard cream is spelled.
Not as far as I'm aware.
Unless I've had it wrong my whole life. But I'm pretty sure it's just cream spelt the way you'd spell cream.
That way.
Custard creme.
There's not an original brand. Because that's the thing, like, a chocolate hobnob is actually a brand, right? Yeah. Like, hobnob is a McVitie's brand.
No one else is making them like them, though, aren't they? Shortbreads. Bourbons. I don't like them.
I don't like bourbons.
I like bourbons.
Ginger nuts. And here are the two controversial ones. A Jaffa cake.
Not a biscuit.
Not a biscuit.
Fucking says so in the name.
Also literally proved in court.
I know.
They baked a giant Jaffa cake.
If you feel that's bad, get yourselves ready for this one. Wagon wheels.
At least there's a biscuit element to a wagon wheel.
No one's calling a wagon wheel a biscuit.
I agree. But that's a better, more appropriate choice than Jaffa cake, which is just factually and legally incorrect.
There's a tiebreak one at the bottom of this one. There isn't all of them, but none of them are that interesting. This one. How many Jaffa cakes in a yard of Jaffa cakes box?
It is. I get one for Christmas every year.
Is that six normal Jaffa cake boxes?
It's either five or six, and they're 12 per pack.
But they're not anymore, because they're 10 in a pack now.
Well, this is 2017, the good old days.
go on. It's...
I'm going to say 60.
4-1 to Max, we literally named none of those.
I'm going
to
say 60.
How many are you going, Matt? Is he going to lowball him? Is he going to eyeball him?
I've gone five boxes, but there's 12. No, yeah, five boxes, but there's 12 in each. 60.
Yeah, I'm going to say, like, 58, maybe?
How are you adding that up?
Just having
fun. It's 48.
Oh, wow. It's four boxes.
That was fun. That was shoddy. May I also say that...
Wait, from us or the game?
Bit of both. The biscuit one was a bit dodgy ground. I did read one earlier, which I was going to ask, but it was the question was just wrong. It was... it said 10 Beatles singles have sold more than any others. What am I listed?
I don't know.
10 Beatles singles had sold more than any others, and then it listed 10 albums.
Yeah, that was weird. So you showed
just,
me that.
That's just
understand.
Incorrect. But I suppose that was good fun. Let's do some feedback.
Okay.
Who's first?
Matt's first on the list.
Go on, Matt.
I can read mine first.
Read it out. Oh, do you know what I've done here? I've completely forgot to put
you
who
put
sent
who they're
them.
From.
Do you know what?
I'll find it.
Yep.
Okay. So, from mystery caller number one. Hi, all. A couple of weeks ago, you did a screen reading of Dale's short film, which was great. After that episode...
The film was called Which Was Great.
Well, it was actually called Citizen, but...
This is from Charles Fanzy.
Great to hear from you, Charles.
Oh, he says at the bottom, Fanzy.
Nice. After that episode, I went and watched the film so I can see what he actually shot and how it looks. And I must say that it deserved every award it was given. What lovely praise.
I think it was one award. So it deserved... One award.
more than
I actually
many.
I don't know if it's one award. Dale's going to beat me
up. We've all won awards.
Have we? Got nominated once. didn't win it. After that, I immediately thought I need to have my group play a one-shot D&D campaign session about this and see how it goes. And here is how it went. I'm very interested to know how this, like, because obviously Dungeons & Dragons is not set in a sci-fi setting like Citizen is. So, did you actually use Dungeons & Dragons rules? Did you use something like Shadowrun? I want to know the details.
Charles, right in.
Yes.
Again.
He had three people instead of two and gave them all jobs. Engineer, captain, scientist. Instead of the air tank rupturing on its own, I had a space pirate combat happen and a stray laser blast ruptured the tank.
Classic.
Is this spell jamming? I wonder if it's spell jamming. When told the ultimatum, I put a whisper in the ear of why they were important and why they were individually the one that needed to survive. Mm-hmm. The captain immediately fought to grab the other ship and steal its air. Brilliant, but bad rolls.
But through bad rolls,
that shot drifted away. There we go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the dice, isn't it?
We're putting it together.
The engineer went mad, as you would, and did try to murder everyone, but was subdued by the scientist, who then fought to open the bay doors and just launch the other two out into space. Ultimately, the captain and the scientist worked together to replace their air tank and roll over to the other ship, and all was fine, outside the engineer dying. When all the lights came on, it turned out the scientist was on trial and absolved of his crime and was allowed back into society.
There we go.
What an entertaining...
Dale said he was very honoured. Those were the words he used.
Yeah, he also went on to say, but they did take some liberties.
Which, as I point out, is exactly what a good Dungeon Master does. They take liberties with the source to make it entertaining for the people around the table.
Agreed. Very fair.
Maybe we need to read more scripts.
As long as Charles makes more D&D campaigns out of it.
I've got some depressing stories I've written, so we can get around to those. I've got some feedback here from Matthew Durzo.
Hello.
Which is similar to Matthew Purslow.
It is a little bit. Yeah. That doesn't mean that we share ancestry.
We call no, it him. Imagine if Matthew Durzo was wicked at naming cheeses.
Anyway, it says, hello, boys. Anything?
Hi.
Oh, all right, yeah, all right. How are you?
I was listening to podcast 506, which was last week, and your predictions for The Last of Us Part 2. We can now talk about this because, Joe, you have finished The Last of Us. The episodes aren't out in the ether.
No, all aside from DLC.
You haven't played Left Behind, but you have played the main game. So
I have.
You're now in a position to predict what will happen in The Last of Us Part 2.
I can.
Yeah.
And I have.
Matthew says The Last of Us is his favourite game of all time, so he's very excited for the sequel. As we all are. Mm. Here's my theory for the game. I think Naughty Dog would do something similar to what we saw in The Godfather Part 2. Now, that intrigues me a lot.
Hello.
Laura Bailey is said to be playing a woman in the game whose name has been kept secret so far. I believe this will be Ellie's mother. I think during the game there'll be flashback sequences in between the regular gameplay where we take the role of Ellie's mother and we found out what happened to her during the outbreak.
Well, that's a popular theory about the trailer where the woman is being hanged, isn't it?
Oh, that's Ellie's mum?
Yeah. I believe that's a theory. I've done a bit of reading.
Have you? so we see what happens after Ellie's birth and with Marlene, and who is the leader of the Fireflies.
Oh, yeah.
I also believe that at some point in the game, Joel will die. Joe will die.
I might die. We can't stop that from happening.
I think Joel will die as well. But judging by the trailer, I believe it happened towards the end of the game, and at some point during the course of the story, there'll be gameplay with Joel and Ellie together like the first one. I feel like this would be a satisfying ending for Joel's arc if he were to die while protecting Ellie as she reaches the conclusion of her mission.
Wow.
I think that something like that will happen, that I think Joel will die in this game, and I think you will be in control of him for a short period of time when it happens.
Do you think they're going to pull the old Joker in Batman Arkham thing and Joel's dead already?
That was my theory, but I'm now feeling like that'll be
it seems
a bit of a cop-out.
Too silly for Naughty Dog.
Yeah, I feel like that is such an emotional moment that they wouldn't have it happen off-screen, his death.
Very interesting. Good point.
I want it to happen early on, though. I want the game to be about Ellie.
That could be a shock element. Even...
What if she was running away with her arms, like the prologue to the first game?
That would be mad. But I think I really like the idea of that flashback stuff with The Godfather Part 2, because I can't remember a game that's done anything that ambitious.
There are definitely flashback games.
Name one.
Flashback.
But anything with that sort of dramatic wealth to it.
Okay.
What? Yeah.
Can I read mine now?
Yeah, I was just talking about The Last of Us.
I liked it. But this is from Chris Waterman.
Okay.
He says, hi all. I was wondering if I could ask for your assistance in promoting a charity stream I'm hosting this weekend. You can. You might be aware that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. As such, I am partnering with our local Killer Queen Jacksonville community. This guy's from Florida.
Ooh.
In hosting an all
women's... Is it guaranteed to blow your mind?
Could be. In hosting an all-women's takeover of my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/rentalrush, for a weekend marathon of gaming and fundraising. We'll be playing games like Dream Daddy, Untitled Goose Game, Mario Kart / Party, a selection of VR games, and a ton of retro titles throughout the weekend. We even have a VR-themed brunch planned for Sunday. Ooh. The stream will run from approximately 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Work it out.
You should call that brunch. What's C instead of a B?
No, 8:30 p.m. French. Eastern. What's that?
Oh, sorry?
God. Eastern for us.
That's half 1 a.m.
Half 1 a.m. October 5th for us through 6 p.m. Eastern, October
6th. So that's tonight.
6th. It's tonight. We will take breaks for sleep, but I imagine the stream will still go plenty late for anybody that is a night owl. I will post a schedule on Thursday on our Twitter page @RentalRushShow. All donations go to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and we have a unique donation link, give.bcrf.org/kqjax. You can play this back in slow motion for that. Yeah. If that's too much to remember, people can also find a donation button right on our Twitch page. That is twitch.tv/rentalrush.
Okay, sounds like a good time. What a good cause.
Lovely cause. Lovely idea. Love to help.
Lovely.
We're into it.
That was lovely. Now, we're going to talk about Joker. So here's your warning. Here's the klaxons. Here's the music. Mm-hmm. Full spoilers for Joker. So don't listen to this unless you've seen it, for God's sake.
Bloody hell.
This is your last warning.
Oh, is
Joker
it?
Spoilers now.
My favourite bit of the film was when Joker said, "I'm kooky coconuts."
I don't remember that bit.
That was about 24 minutes in.
That was an early spoiler.
Let's just do a broad. So last week I said that I thought this was a brilliant film. I still think it's a brilliant film. I don't think it's as controversial as people maybe want it to be.
No.
I don't think that the director's comments this week have helped.
No.
But what did you guys think of the film? Just a broad.
I think it is a good film.
Okay.
I don't think it's a masterpiece.
Okay.
I personally, and this is not what reviews are subjective.
Yeah.
I personally wouldn't give it a 10 myself. Okay. I think Joaquin Phoenix's performance is unbelievable and he should be given props.
Yep.
And perhaps even accolades.
He is unbelievable.
I don't think the script does justice to that performance.
Okay.
And I don't think where it goes interests me all that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might be in a broadly similar camp to Joe on this. I think that Joaquin Phoenix is very, very good in it. The one thing that does really please me about it is that it is definitely more grounded in comics than I feared that it would be.
That was the thing you kept asking me before, saying, like, yeah. Does it feel like a joke film? Or does it just feel like a film about a man descending into madness?
I have constantly had this fear is not the right word. Who actually gives a fear about films?
Yeah.
But that now that comic book films are big, we seem to be having a lot of, and it's the thing that Christopher Nolan deals with very, very well, is he managed to make a Batman film that was still very much a Batman film. It just didn't feel like a comic book film, but was very true to its source material. I was a bit worried that this was going to be kind of like, well, people like comic book films, and to make money out of doing my art house film that's not actually about anything, if I just stick some Joker makeup on my main character, I can make a arty film. I was a bit worried that that was what it was going to be. It's not. I think it's very heavily anchored in a lot of themes that I like about the DC Gotham-based comics. So I do like that about it. I don't think it's anywhere near as controversial or, to a degree, anywhere near as clever as I think certain people have made out about it.
I agree.
I think it has a masterstroke of a performance in it. I think it's got lots of interesting things to say.
Yep.
I don't think it's... like, it does surprise me that it won the Venice thingy, even though I think it's a good film. It's not...
Yeah.
I didn't think it's the sort of film that would win people over that don't already dismiss... No. Films based in the universe.
I don't think it does anything groundbreaking in particular. I just think what it does brilliantly. That's why I love it. It's very much my sort of film. Like, I love Taxi Driver and Dog Day Afternoon and
it's directed in
Network
a comparable, and when I say comparable manner, yes, it does look like a lot of those like 70s Scorsese films, but like in terms of direction, it's incredibly well accomplished. Like, you could put that alongside those films and not say that it was any worse directed.
No. It just does what I think it does just very, very well, which is why I love it. I just think if I made that film myself, there wasn't many things I would do differently. Like, I think one or two of the jokes don't land. I do find the one where he just walks into the glass door out of place.
Like,
for that character.
And that moment.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he is
deliberately trying to mess with tone there, but that's also an excuse for getting things wrong sometimes.
The way I was trying to explain it in my head is like, oh, is he trying to make... Because that's one of the first moments we've seen Arthur Fleck take control of a situation,
not growing confidence.
Lose it, take his life by the scruff of the neck and do something with himself. And it is kind of like undercutting that whole moment and giving you the sense that no matter what he does, he will always fuck up in some way. And I didn't mind that. I minded a bit that it was like, it was played for a laugh. Yeah. Whereas what it could have been was he looks just devastated by that happening to him when he thought he was on the up.
Yeah. I just don't think it works at that part of the film. If it was in the first 15 minutes where all the clowns, other clowns taking the piss out of him, he just walks inside, that would work more because at that point he's a fool. Whereas at this point in the film, he's growing more into a confident, just mad killer, really.
Yeah.
And
like
doing a bit of slapstick comedy doesn't work.
Yeah. And that's... I'm kind of the opposite to you in that the moment at which it starts tying itself into the comics is the moment at which I stopped liking it as much.
But like, is that almost a case of like, if it had been almost like a Taxi Driver, if it had actually just been about a guy that has horrendous mental health issues going slowly more chaotic, like would that have been, that would have probably been a pretty good film, right?
Yeah. But like, I think what I wanted, and this is like, it's not fair to want something different and complain about it, but I think what I was coming to expect or coming to want from the end of that film was a clean break from Batman.
Sure.
Not doing down what he is as the Joker, but doing it in a completely different way, using this as a one-shot comic, an Elseworlds type thing, where at the end, I kind of hoped he would kill himself. And that would be the spark. And it's like the Joker is now a spirit, an idea, a movement,
rather than him
finishing as the Joker.
Yeah.
To me is like doing, it lets down
that's
this idea
I
that this is a one-off
if,
to me.
I kind of like the theory that maybe he is now just locked up and he is this myth of something that happened one night, this mad thing in American history that happened, and that maybe 20 or 30 years in the future, someone does copycat that and become the actual Joker.
So something I quite like to see is maybe if like this Robert Pattinson film starts an actual Batman universe that can actually sustain itself. One of the things that I quite like is rather than a direct tie-in, because I think it does need to live on its own.
Yeah.
But maybe just a mention that, oh, the night the Waynes died, there were chaos on the streets of Gotham.
Yeah, just a throwaway. Like, so I think this film is as much the birth of Joker as it is the birth of Batman, really. It's the birth of Gotham becoming this lawless place, which we don't really see if this is a one-night thing or if this is now, this is what Gotham is, a place run by the lawless and the crime.
I mean, it has to be, right? Because that's the whole... This is the thing why, like, I think if you're going to do a comic book film, there are certain things that you have to work with. And, like, the whole point of Batman is, you know, there are large segments that fit together, but one of those is the fact that Gotham is almost like the incurable city, and like
it's perpetual 70s New York.
Yeah,
right.
And it has to be in chaos, and it's kind of like I very much get the impression from this film that like this chaos didn't happen on the night that the Joker caused those things. Like the state of that city is fucking disgusting.
Yeah. Like this was like the trigger point, really.
I think this is the point where, and I must say, I was slightly confused through it as to who started the movement, because for quite a while, I felt that what it was actually Thomas Wayne that had started it by his mentioning that about clowns.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, it's people disliking that he's said that they're clowns, which is why they start the movement, because I don't really like the idea of the Joker, because I think he's just an idiot. And like, I don't
like this version of the Joker is quite stupid.
Yeah, and I sort of don't like him being the one that, I don't think, especially because he was on his own when he shoots the people on the train.
Yeah.
I don't really see there's any way that he could have created that movement, but I do like the idea of people responding to Wayne being the reason why they'd rise up against him. But as the film went on, it seemed to suggest that no, it was definitely because
I think it's a bit of both.
I think you can have it both ways, in as much as yes, Wayne created the response, but that response is galvanized by his appearance on TV and what he does. There's something slight, and I know it's a film and it's a comic book film particularly, there is something slightly odd to me about the idea that a man shooting a man live on TV, and a man who is only ever presented as universally beloved, would cause this mass exodus of people to destroy everything in the streets and worship him.
Like, I feel like
it's there's a lot of people at the end. Like, I thought, oh, are these three people going to pick him up and take him away? And that's like his little gang of maniacs.
See, I would much have preferred that, because one of the things that I do think there might be a slight, and this goes deep into politics now, is those people that are in the masks that are rallying outside of, like, their political message is, for as far as me as a fucking dirty leftist is concerned, they've got a good point, you know, like, get rid of, you know, the rich, eat the rich, you know, like, they're the, and they are, in the canon of Gotham, one of the things that causes such chaos. Them looking at a man that just shot one of the nation's most beloved TV hosts on...
I think, like, it's more at the point where he... It's more his speech, and that he admits that he was the person who killed them.
Sure.
And then... And I still think... We don't know... We see Murray as beloved, but that might just be by...
Yeah.
As by Joaquin Phoenix's character.
Yeah, we are viewing it through Arthur's eyes a lot of the time.
And,
right.
like, some... Like, a lot of those people that write probably look at anyone in his position who is wealthy and well-off as someone... As someone to dislike.
It is what I want, right?
Murray is a late-night host who just does Gotham. Like, he's like public access late show. Yeah. It's really weird.
I really enjoyed it. And the big question is, did that even happen? Because they do kind of put that... I do think it happened, because otherwise the film is pointless.
But
like, how much of... We're displayed, obviously, the bits with Sassy Beats, a lot of that is just fantasy in his head.
Yeah.
And they do hammer that point home, but they do, because some audiences don't notice nuance. So they have to show you every scene that she wasn't in.
Really bother me.
I know.
It was so bad. It felt so against a film that's quite willing to let you work out the join the dots. I didn't need that.
Maybe one of the concessions that DC were like, please just make it people understand it.
Yeah. I guess part of it is like, I don't know how much, because as we've already said, like, I don't think it's anywhere near as controversial as certain critics have made it out. I think it's very clear through this film that he is a maniac. He's
an irredeemable character. Yeah. Like, is the bit at the end where he's lifted up and people, obviously, there's a crowd cheering him, but those are all bad. Like, those aren't good. He's not now a national hero.
You can pity someone at the same time as thinking they're a dickhead.
Exactly. Like, I can sympathize with
he is pitiable.
A mentally ill person who has had child abuse and has his health funding taken away from him, loses his job because someone stitched him up. But that doesn't mean, I think, that him killing four people is good.
Well, it's like Taxi Driver is not a film about a hero.
No.
And that is hammered home. And it's the same conversation that they had when Taxi Driver came out. Just because you're following someone and watching their life and understanding them doesn't mean that you like them or think that what they do is good.
Exactly.
And the end of Taxi Driver makes that incredibly clear in the same way as this does.
Yeah.
Like, there's a tipping point and he tips way over it and he's an asshole and he acts like the Joker at the end. He's doing dances in front of police officers getting beaten up. Like, he's so obviously not a bad person.
Not a bad person.
Not a redeemable person. I'm on cards on the table. I'm a dangerous lunatic. And I've been radicalised by this film. I do want to say, like, I don't think the people who have said that this is a dangerous, controversial film are doing...
It.
No, not even that. Maybe they haven't, but I don't think they're doing it out of anything, out of a bad place.
If anything, it's just over concern.
Yeah, those criticisms come... I don't want it to seem like we're fucking... Bill Maher shouting about it.
And I understand the climate we're living in at the moment.
Well,
but
that's
not
it, right?
Everything is going to trigger something.
No.
Maybe that's us from what feels like a non-gun safe place in Britain.
Yeah.
It also doesn't help that, like, the memes are already there and there's already a certain, you know, subsect of the internet that has taken him in as their little kind of, like, this is what society does to us and we're, you know, justified. There are going to be some people, in the same way that some people saw Taxi Driver as a legitimate hero.
Well, it's almost like that's the message of the film, that some people are pricks.
Yeah,
absolutely. The thing that I do really like that it takes sort of seriously, and I haven't, because literally we saw it, 2 hours ago, I haven't finished unpackaging whether I think it's sensitively dealt with, but I'm pleased it does, is one of my big things with Gotham is that it's about how it fails people with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point why so many people are running amok in that city.
Yeah.
And I like that, because... going in knowing the conversation's been around, I was a bit worried that they were going to play Arthur Fleck as a very straight person with an understanding of what was going on. He's clearly very, very ill through this film.
Yeah. And that's the thing, he's not really an anarchist. He doesn't have a real... He's not
Heath Ledger's Joker.
No, he just wants to be liked.
He wants a dad.
Yeah, he just wants to be liked. And ultimately, the way he's found people to like him is by killing people, which is unfortunate.
On that point, do you think it's definitive that Thomas Wayne is his dad in this? Because of that picture?
I think he's absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of took that picture as, like, another imagination in some way. Like,
there's
a picture where it says on the back, "You look great in this picture," or something, TW.
Yeah.
Which is like, and then he screws it up. Uh-huh. And you're like, oh, is this the point at which it's telling us it was all a lie? Thomas Wayne did father an illegitimate child.
Yeah.
He is Batman's brother. Which, that really worried me when that started. Yeah.
I think that isn't right, because just look at the age. Like, Joaquin Phoenix, like, I know people can play people of a different age. That character is around 40. Thomas Wayne looks around 50.
He's 60. I think it's possible.
Really?
I think what worried me is that, like, it would be taken more definitively. I think it's kind of left up in the air. As a lot of things, you look back at that film, you're like, oh, because of Zazie Beetz's character, is this a moment at which I'm meant to be questioning whether
and
this happened?
I want that to never be cleared up.
Yeah, no, me too. You think the Zazie Beetz stuff was worthwhile?
No.
I don't understand why that plotline's in the film.
I think it's
really
maybe...
Do you think it's
just another example of him saying how much he wants to be like... Yeah. Or is it just the point of realisation for him in the film that, oh, I am mental?
I think you could have a way more effective version. I know, again, I'm second-guessing a professional filmmaker's film. But to me, it would have been much more effective if you had... That moment of realizing that he's been imagining stuff is him going to Pogo's, doing being presented as if he's done incredibly well. Because there's that moment where there's like unrealistic amounts of laughter to what he said.
And then he watches the TV.
Exactly. And you have a montage of him going back to that club and killing and getting better and better. And then he appears on TV and you're like, wow, he's actually... The concept is he's made it in comedy. And then it's him being made fun of from the first time you saw. Mm. That to me would have sold that concept way better than there's a woman down the hall and he's imagining being with her. Which we've seen so many times.
Like, have you thought about making films, Joe?
Yeah, I am pretty good. I'm pretty good at films.
But I think, we've done a
lot of
nitpicking. Great film.
It's a good film.
And I just don't want to see that Joker. I hope they leave it alone. I think they'll leave it alone.
I don't think Joaquin Phoenix is going to do
it again. Phoenix is not the kind of actor who's going to go, let's do a sequel.
Yeah.
He's also, dare I say it, not the right sort of Joker to be put against a Batman.
No.
That Joker in particular would be an odd one, because the jump in that character would have to be so wild to make him in any... Like, imagine Batman being around and on that night he's hanging out. Batman would just come down, swoop him up and take him away. Like, he'd just be like, woohoo!
See, that's like the reason why, like, because Heath Ledger is much more... I like this film because, as you say, it's a bit like an Elsewhere in that, like, the great strength of comics is that they've just decided that we can actually just keep telling all these little one-shot stories, and we can do what-ifs or different interpretations, and every writer and artist has their own interpretation of what those characters are. Mm. My interpretation of the Joker is actually incredibly different to what this Joker is. Mm. But I appreciate that we've got this version. But you can't... He's not an antagonist. He's an antagonist to himself and the people around him, but not to a crime fighter.
Yeah.
No.
You need the... Like, he doesn't seem to believe in ultimate chaos, which is all that the Joker as an antagonist believes in.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger... It's interesting. Like, is Heath Ledger mentally ill or not? All you know is that he's incredibly clever and has no political or society beliefs. He just wants chaos.
Heath Ledger's Joker is like more of a punk. He's like an old school anarchist nihilist. Yeah. Like, he's got more in common with the bad guys in The Big Lebowski than he does with that Joker that we saw today.
But which obviously means that he is a terrible problem for Batman to overcome, whereas Arthur Fleck is more of a danger to himself really than anything else.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. I also think the music is absolutely brilliant.
Music's great.
Especially the original score. That is incredible music, especially when it swells right at the end and he does the little blood smile, which is a great moment.
Do you think that blood smile's meant to look like the Batman logo? Because that's what I looked at.
I didn't see that.
Like, it's got such a perfect like swoop in the same way as Batarangs. I was like, they've done that on purpose.
I don't know. But yeah.
We should. We've done a lot of nitpicking. Can we quickly talk about how good Joaquin Phoenix is? Because all we've really done is said he's good.
Well, he's astonishing.
The thing that, like, he's obviously fantastic. And what I love particularly is he has two laughs. Like, and this, I didn't know at all about the conceit of he has a laughing disease. Yeah. Like, that's a mental...
That's still like, it's is a brain that a trauma thing? Or is that something he's been told he has
but
and
I think
he does it?
I prefer to think that it's real because it makes so much of that film so much more tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he can distinguish between his real laugh and his broken laugh.
It's not until like halfway through it though because you can see if the smile comes in.
Well, it's almost, I think the first time you really properly hear him laugh out loud rather than smirk with happiness is when he sees himself on TV.
Yeah.
And that laugh is so shocking because you're like, fuck, he sounds like a different person.
Yeah.
That's an unbelievable feat of acting.
Yeah. I think he's the best actor on the planet, and I think he's proven it.
He's very good. You pointing out the dancing thing as well was an ad lib, like
because
the dancing feels like such a piece of that character.
Yeah,
that he made up on the spot.
It's just so like it could so easily just be a cheesy like arty thing. Like let's have him just do a weird dance, but I think it just comes across just terrifying.
Well, actually, I thought that until the very end. The shot of him walking down the hallway, leaving blood on the floor, and then doing Scooby-Doo running around at the end of the hallway. It's like, come on, mate.
Yeah.
That was quite silly.
But I think my favourite moment is not even when he says anything, it's when he comes off the train near the end, and he's just, the shot holds for like a few seconds longer than it should, and he's just staring, his eyes are just dead. He looks like a shark with clown makeup on. It's amazing.
He's very good.
He's a very good
He's
actor.
Got as well, like the way that he contorts himself actually reminds me a little bit of the Joker from Arkham Asylum. Like he's got those kind of very gangly limbs and it's because he lost so much weight for
that
it.
That scene where it's his back
and
there's just something
the creaking
with
of the leather shoe.
But like his left arm looks like it's broken off and been put further down his body. Like it's so mad.
Yeah.
What an incredible thing.
Is incredible.
What a ledge.
A ledger.
Don't say that. That's not fair. Oh man, have you seen that like terrible meme picture going? Well, it's not a meme picture. It's like
the one of him like over his shoulder.
Yeah, where the Heath Ledger's Joker is over his shoulder, and it just says like,
"You got it, bud.
You got it, brother." Imagine being who is definitely the 14-year-old that made that picture.
It's bad, isn't it?
Oh man,
but yeah,
someone's going to regret that.
I think it's absolutely brilliant.
It's very good. And I really hope if you've got here with us that you've seen it.
Yes.
Or just don't give a single shit.
Yeah. I've seen it twice in a week now. I don't need to see it again for a while, though, because it's heavy.
Oh, I mean this in a good way. It feels long because you've spent a lot of time with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a long film by modern standards, but... No.
He's in nearly every shot as well. It's not like...
Oh, yeah.
It's not quite the intensity of Jennifer Lawrence in Mother, where, like, literally, what is she in, like, 98% of the shots of that film? But you see a lot of Joaquin Phoenix from a lot of different angles.
Yeah. It's quite amazing.
Very good.
Is that it?
Yeah.
All
good
right.
Good chat.
What a lovely time.
Yeah.
I like talking about films when we can say the end.
Yeah.
It's good.
Here's some Joker music. Bye. Not Gary Glitter, though.
No. The less said about that choice, the better.
I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world,
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken, or did I turn to the script?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal, 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.